feast of St. Helwig, who was unlucky in her children. Before I left the abbey, Edward showed me how to mix some colours and shape goose feathers into pens, so I too can make flowers and angels. The black ink is easy. We have walnut husks and an abundance of soot. I also found buttercups, sneezeweed, and moss for yellows and greens, but have no lapis lazuli stone to grind for blue. I made a paste from crushed bilberries that looks as blue as a robin's egg, but grows sour and so sticky that I must add a task the brothers never dreamed of, picking bugs out of the heavenly sky or the Virgin's veil. 17th day of October. Feasts of Saints Ethelred and Ethelbert, sons of Ermenred, great-grandsons of Ethelbert, brothers of Ermenberger, nephews of Erkenbert and cousins of Egbert. I had a sweet dream last night. In my dream, I was captured by a dragon who looked like my father. My Uncle George, wearing a cloak made of feathers, stabbed the dragon in the neck with a goose quill pen. Then George leapt onto his horse and, reaching down, gathered me up and lifted me to his lap. We rode off together to be crusaders. After I awoke, I kept my eyes closed for a long time so I could hold on to the dream. 18th day of October. Feast of St. Luke, writer of Gospels, physician and artist, who lived to be 84 and died unmarried. In the village late last night, one of Thomas Cotter's chickens, hunting in the dirt of the cottage floor for bugs, scratched too close to the cooking fire and set her feathers aflame. She squawked and flapped about the cottage from bed to table to the bacon hanging from the roof beams, setting all on fire. Chased by a naked Thomas, the chicken flew out the door and down the road toward the church, leaving little fires smouldering in her path, until Ralph Little Mouse threw a bucket of water on her, whereupon she lay down gasping in the road, bald and charred. Thomas's family now sleep in our hall until a new cottage is built. All the family but the chicken, which they ate. I try not to laugh when I see Thomas's family, for they are sore grieved. It is no easy task. The king, I think, should be informed of this event. I can see him besieging the Scots by setting fire to hundreds of chickens and letting them flap over the Scottish castle walls. 19th day of October. Feast of St. Frileswide, Virgin. Though why that should make someone a saint, I do not know. While we picked bugs and burrs from the weaving wool this morning, Morwenna tried to make me understand why my father seeks a husband for me and why it is my duty to marry where he says. I understand full well. He is as greedy as a goat. I believe we have enough of things. Those with many manors have to travel from one to another to take care of them. More cows and pigs mean more dung. More pots and bowls and tables mean more cooking and scrubbing. But my father does not see it my way, and seeks to improve our position through my marriage bed. Corpus bones! I have not even begun my monthly courses yet. So how can I be a wife? Later I told Morwenna my jest about the flaming chickens, and she, traitor and carry-tale, told my mother. I have now to embroider another cloth for the church. They think I am not trying hard enough not to laugh. Bleak. All is bleak. 20th day of October. Feast of St. Irene. Killed by a man because she would not love him. My Uncle George has come home. He is tall and fair and funny. Last night he told us wondrous stories of the places he has been. The cities have names that whisper like the wind. Venice, Damascus, Byzantium, Samarkand. I say them over and over to myself, so I will not forget them before I can tell Perkin. I used to imagine Uncle George in the Holy Land, wearing a red cross sewn on his white tunic, nobly fighting for God and Christ and England. I could almost see the line of crusaders reaching from Jerusalem all the way back to London, like a procession on a holy day, or the arrival of foreign merchants at the fair, with snow-white horses and mules prancing in their bells and silks, ladies in coaches of gold and jewels gleaming in the sun like fire, musicians with harps and timbrels and trumpets, and little children scampering alongside, throwing flowers in their path as they sing songs of praise to those coming to free them from the heathens. It must have been like the march of the righteous into paradise. I told Uncle George about my imaginings, and he laughed and laughed. He said I did get one thing right. There were plenty of donkeys, but not all of them had four legs. His years on crusade, he said, were more like hell than the heaven I imagine, with little cheering and singing, but much dying of thirst, eating dead horses, and wading knee-deep in blood and broken bodies. I must doubt this. 21st day of October, Feast of St. Ursula and her 11,000 companions martyred by the Huns. Uncle George is teaching me, in Latin, Greek, and Arabic, what he says are the most useful phrases for a crusader. Tell me the way again more slowly. How much for wine? Too much? Have you herbs for my aching head? You cheat, you lie, you son of a dog and a camel. Mayhap Uncle George will help me take up the cross and be a crusader. I won't even have to bind my chest and pretend to be a man, for it is well known how Eleanor, wife of the second Henry, mother of Richard the Lionheart and the terrible John Softsword, led her band of women on crusade. They sat astride magnificent white horses, and below their linen tunics wore tight-fitting hose and red leather boots to the knee with orange silk lining. I would walk to the Holy Land for red boots with orange silk lining. I will speak to Uncle George. 22nd day of October. Feast of St. Donatus, an Irish man who was proclaimed a bishop when bells miraculously rang as he entered church. Learned men in the East call this the birthday of the world, the anniversary of the creation on this day 4,000 years ago. So says Uncle George. I wonder who has kept the reckoning. Few of the villagers know even when they were born. They say it was the year the miller's barn caught fire, or the new priest was driven from the village for lechery. Uncle George's baggage finally caught up with him, and he has given us all presents. Bronze knives and cooking pots, silk for my mother in shades of saffron and lavender, and for our stomachs ginger, cinnamon, cloves, figs, dates and almonds. For me, something called an orange, shriveled and dry with a brown musty smell. When I close my eyes under the must, I can smell just a hint of sweet hot sunshine. George says when they are new, oranges taste like water from the rivers of paradise. He also brought me a special gift, a popinjay in a cage carved of ivory and sweet-smelling wood, to join the family of birds in my chamber. Since my father built the solar where he and my mother and any important guests sleep, I share a sleeping chamber only with my nurse Morwena, my mother's serving woman, any visiting girls, and my birds. With the popinjay, I have 19 birds in cages hanging from the roof timbers. Linnets, skylarks, and nightingales for their song, magpies for their talk. Now that I don't have to hear my father bellowing and snoring and spitting, I can hear their music. Last night I fell asleep smelling my orange and listening to my birds sing. I dreamed I was an angel. 23rd day of October. Feast of St. Cuthbert, first man ever to shoe a horse. I was finally able to speak to Uncle George about my idea of going on crusade to the Holy Land. It is too late, he says. Their own greed, cruelty, and stupidity defeated the crusaders, and the Turks have only to sweep them out like soiled straw. Sometimes George does not sound like one who has worn the Holy Cross. He says he stopped being a crusader when he realized God could not be pleased by so much blood, no matter whose. He makes me confused. My cheeks glow. My heart flutters like a hawk moth, and my dreams grow soft and swoony. I do not know if the turmoil of the liver I am suffering is because of George, or because I had two portions of eel pie for supper. 24th day of October. Feast of St. Maglorious, who chased a dragon out of Jersey. I met Ilis in the high meadow as we planned. She had lost the circlet that bound her hair, her boots were torn and muddy, and her nose was red from the sun. She looked much like me. She told me more stories of the French king and his ladies, of castles and tournaments, of the Lady Ghislaine, who kept a tame badger, of Guillot of Lyon, who farted as he bowed to the king and was sent from court for a year, of her best friend Marie, who married a ghost. I told her about my handsome, confusing Uncle George. She is eager to see him for herself, so I will have my mother invite her for my Saint's Day celebration. Elis thinks George must look like the Archangel Michael. I told her he looks more like the Saint George who slew the dragon. In truth, he is handsomer than either of those, for his green eyes are alive and change colours in the sun. At times a red blush flows across his cheeks. Tiny drops of sweat shine in the little hairs about his mouth, and he smells of horses and spice and leather. No dead saint could be as beautiful as that. I missed dinner and supper both, but I reached home before dark. I told my mother I was gathering sloes for jelly for Morwena. Told Morwena I was sent for rose hips for my mother. Mayhap they will not compare stories until after I am asleep. My Uncle George is an eagle. 25th day of October. Feast of Saints Crispin and Crispinian, shoemakers, pricked to death with cobbler's awls. I have mixed water and eggs with my writing inks to make paint for my chamber walls, where I am painting a scene from heaven, with dogs and birds who look like me, angels with my mother's face, and saints with the faces of Edward and Elis and George. Below is hell, where poor souls with my father's face writhe in eternal torment. I gave God Perkins' face, since Perkins is the wisest person I know. But Morwena flew into a terrible fright, wailing about blasphemy and damnation. So I painted Perkin out, and now God just has a sort of watery grey face. 26th day of October, Feast of Saints Eater and Bean, which I think is very funny. Meg from the dairy and I sorted cider apples today. My mother makes the best cider in Lincolnshire. She swears it is because she always includes a number of rotten apples in the mix. I was wondering if this could be true of people. If the world needs a few rotten people to make the sweetest mix. This would explain the problem of God allowing evil in the world. Meg only giggles when I talk to her of these matters. She is, however, good to talk to about how to get a weakly calf to drink from a pail, what will keep fairies from getting into your eggs, and whose wife threw him out of the cottage for taking too much ale. Except for Perkin. Meg is probably my best friend on the manor, when I can stop her from curtsying and my ladying me. 27th day of October. Feast of St. Alran, over whose soul angels and devils fought. The sun is shining, so I have thrown open the shutter in my chamber to let light and air in. I love my chamber when it is warm and sunny. In the middle is the bed I share with Morwenna, large and high, with curtains all around and a trundle under, where the serving maids sleep. At the foot is a chest, carved and dark with age, that looks as if it should be full of treasure, but instead is stuffed with old clothes. On the right wall is my mural of heaven and hell. On the left wall are three pegs for my gowns and cloaks. And straight ahead is the window, shutters open now, and a stool pulled up, so I can sit and write and look over the yard to the hills and meadows beyond. Rain tomorrow. It is certain always to rain heavily on the feast of St. Simon and Jude. 28th day of October. Feast of St. Simon and Jude. Sunny. 29th day of October. Feast of St. Colman, an Irish bishop who taught a mouse to keep him awake in chapel. Elis has come with a load of puppies from her best hound, a gift from her father to mine, she says. I think she could not wait for my saint's day to see the beautiful George. She heard mass with us and stayed for dinner and dancing and gossip and supper, and now must spend the night as it is too late to ride home. Elis thought of everything. I have named the puppies. The little male is Brutus, after the first king of Britain, and the females are all called after herbs, betony, rosemary, anise, and rue. 30th day of October, feast of St. Marcellus the Centurion, killed for resigning from the army. I tried after dinner today to get George to play chess with me, but he said he promised the Lady Elis a walk to acquaint her with our manor. Corpus bones, it is moat and muddy yard, house and stables and barn, dovecot, privy and pigyard. She could see it all from the hall door. I watched George and Elis from my window. When they walk together, she walks straight and slow and quiet. This is not the same Elis from the high meadow. She looks at George as if he were the king, and he looks at her as if she were made of Venetian glass. Seeing them gives me a pain in my liver. I must doctor myself with wormwood and mint. 31st day of October. Feast of St. Urk, British Martyr, and All Hallows Eve, when ghosts walk. We sat up late tonight, eating nuts and apples, watching the bonfires lit throughout the shire to drive off witches and goblins. Many people are afeard tonight of the dead who come back to visit the earth. But the only dead I know are my tiny brothers and sisters who died before they were born. And how could I be afeard of them? I wish they would come visit. It might ease my mother's grieving. As we roasted apples in the fire, Uncle George told us of the places he has been. I could almost see them as he spoke. The gravelly sea, all gravel and sand without a drop of water, which ebbs and flows as other seas do and is full of fishes. The nearby Isle of Giants, home to men 30 feet tall who sleep standing up. And the Isle of Pytar, where the people are tiny as elves and eat nothing but live by the smell of wild apples. I especially long to see the beasts he described. Unicorns, dragons, snails so great men live in their shells. A splendid big beast called an elephant with a tail at each end. This one I think my uncle's fancy. And the incredible whales, fish as big as houses, who could swallow whole a man or a bear or a horse. My Uncle George has brought gaiety and wonder into my life. I will not give him to Elis and satisfy myself with wormwood cordials. November. First day of November, which the Saxons call the Month of Blood, Feast of All Saints. We took down the hazel branches from the doors and windows and blessed God for keeping us free of witches for another year. Would that it was so easy to keep the abominable Robert away. He is coming for Christmas. The first memory I have of this brother is his drowning ants by pissing on the anthill. He has plagued me ever since. Second day of November, Feast of All Souls. I joined the village children today as they went from cottage to cottage begging for soul cakes. Our cook makes the largest cakes, but Perkins' granny makes the best. Ordinarily, I do not mind Perkins' granny's muddle-mindedness, for she is the most roomy-hearted person I know, but sometimes she forgets to make her cakes, and we all are disappointed. One year she made cakes at Michaelmas and was full angry that no one came begging for them. Another All Souls' Day, as we stood at her window singing, "Soul, a soul, a soul cake, please, good mistress, a soul cake," she wished us a holy Christmas and sang back, "Here we come a-wassailing among the boughs so green." This year she got the day right, and I snuck extra cakes into my chamber for tomorrow. I have already eaten them. Third day of November, Feast of St. Romwald, who at 3 days old said, "I am a Christian," and died. The beast my father roared especially ugly roars today. I never seem to please him, although it is true, I never try. When I was a child, I oft-times thought I was a foundling, or even better, the beloved daughter of our good King Edward Longshanks, left here with this beast and his wife for fostering. Mayhap it is true, and now that I near 14, my real father will call me home, and I will live in a castle with turkey rugs on the floor and glass in the windows, and dress my hair with a comb of gold and ivory. No, even better, my real father is a woodsman from the West, who lives in a treehouse made of sticks and branches. He calls me home, and we live with the beasts of the forest and dance in the moonlight in the wet grass, and no one calls us in to go to bed or finish our sewing, which Morwena is doing now, the devil take her. Fourth day of November, Feast of St. Burstan, who once, when praying for the dead, heard them answer, "Amen." Brought my popinjay to dinner. He fell off my shoulder into the boiled merling, and I had to take him to the kitchen to wash the sauce off his feathers and let him dry himself by the fire. My father roared because there were a few feathers in the fish. He has eaten worse. As I passed his chair after dinner, The beast hit me hard enough to crack my rump. Afterwards, my Uncle George winked at me and made all the uproar worth it. My heart almost stopped. 5th day of November, Feast of Saints Zachary and Elizabeth, parents of John the Baptist, although they were much too old. Father Hugh came for dinner after Mass. He is infested with boils and blotches and sought the aid of my Lady Mother. To test my skills in doctoring, she asked what I would advise. I thought the best remedy was to throw himself in the river, but aloud I advised an ointment made of oil of bay and a bath once in a while. 6th day of November, Feast of St. Iltyd, who once sailed to Brittany with corn ships to relieve a famine. Went to the high meadow to meet Elis as we planned. I waited all day, but she never came. Morwena caught me sneaking back after supper, and I have been made to do extra sewing. My belly is croaking with hunger, and I have 7 ticks. 7th day of November, Feast of St. Willibrord, Archbishop, who killed sacred cows, destroyed idols, and still lived to be 81. Elis did not come to the meadow yesterday because she was with my Uncle George. I have made myself another draught of wormwood and mint. 8th day of November, Feast of the Crowned Martyrs, who were either 4 Roman soldiers or 5 Persian stonemasons. I put a toad in George's bed. I don't know why. I cried at dinner and left the table before the almond cream. I don't know why. I looked for Perkin to pinch him, but he was gone with the goats. I cannot be a monk, nor a crusader, nor a tumbler. I must stay here and hem sheets until I die. My humours are greatly out of balance. I prescribe for myself wormwood in spiced wine and some of the custard left from supper, and I will let all of the dogs sleep in my bed. 9th day of November, Feast of St. Theodore, the Wonder Worker. It appears a storm is coming. Father Hugh says storms are the work of the devil. Does that mean if the devil is busy with some other mischief, the weather is good? Or if the devil is occupied bringing a storm to Stonebridge, there is no sickness or evil or bad weather elsewhere in the world? Is the devil, then, being in charge of the weather, more powerful than God? 10th day of November, Feast of Eamacbric, Bishop and Physician of Ireland, who could travel through the air. Father Hugh is ringing the bells to drive the storm away, but the devil is winning this time. 11th day of November, Martinmas, Feast of St. Martin of Tours, who gave his cloak to a beggar who was Christ in disguise. The wind ripped the roofs off several of the cottages, and the unlucky villagers crowded into our hall last night. Trees fell, and the lowlands were flooded with a foot of water as our normally dilly-dally river leapt its banks and ran through the fields looking for things to devour. Perkins said babies in their cradles were washed out of the cottages and sailed away to lands unknown, like Moses in the Bible. This morning we can see the river tumbling with dead rats, turnip tops, and cooking pots. 12th day of November, Feast of St. Cadwallader, the Battle Shunner. Why, I wonder, did God make faces with the nose over the mouth instead of the other way? Why do noses have 2 openings and mouths only 1? And why do we need to blow our noses but never our ears? or our eyes? I thought to ask Morwenna these questions, but when she doesn't have answers, she just bellows at me and sends me to do embroidery, so I dare not risk it. It rains today, so I am sitting in my chamber listening to the music of my birds and wondering. 13th day of November. Feast of St. Abbo of Fleury, killed in a fight between serving men and monks. My father is confined to his bed with severe ale head. I ground some peony root to soothe his pain, but he drank the powder in more ale, so I don't know how much good it will do. I wonder why every occasion for mourning or celebrating seems to call for ale. Birth ales, church ales, bride ales, funeral ales, harvest ales. Every week our hall is filled with guests who are marking some occasion with ale on one day and violently ridding themselves of it the next. Birds and animals and children, being smarter, never get drunk and never have ale head or putrid stomach. 14th day of November, Feast of St. Dufrig, the bishop who crowned Arthur King of Britain. All is ashes. I was in the high meadow today with Elis, who says she loves my Uncle George and he loves her and they wish to wed. I must doubt that her father, the Baron, will let her be given to a younger son with no land and no title, but she says she always gets her way, so I am greatly afeard. Will they, my two most favourite in the world, abandon me for each other? I am sore stricken. I have heard that if lovers meet a pig while walking, it is certain to doom their love. If only I could arrange for them to meet a pig, or even better, a weasel. Where do I get a weasel? And how do I get them all three together? I think to need more wormwood tonight. 15th day of November, Feast of St. Malo, a bishop who sang psalms to his horse. A grey and drizzly day. I have done extra hours of embroidery, for it gave me time to think undisturbed about Elis and George. I thought to make a spell to curse them, but I do not know where to get dragon dung. Mayhap I should pray instead. But I am not very good at asking nicely for things, even from God. 16th day of November, Feast of St. Margaret of Scotland, Queen and Needleworker. They are cleaning out the privy today. The stench drove me from the house into the muddy fields, but when they started to spread the manure on the fields, I went back into the house. One thing I will never do is run away and be a privy cleaner. 17th day of November, Feast of St. Hilda, Abbess of Whitby, said to be a relative of my mother. They found the remains of several spindles, many skeins of wool, and an unfinished tapestry in the muck from the privy. Why is everyone so certain they are mine? 18th day of November, Feast of St. Mawes, who can cure headaches, worms, and snakebite. I have developed a rash on my body where the rough cloth rubs on my skin. I wanted to take a bath, thinking that the dirt on my skin made the rash worse, but the bathing tub has been turned upside down and is being used as an extra table in the kitchen, and I cannot have it until spring. So I just spread goose grease on my rash. The dogs are following me everywhere. 19th day of November, Feast of St. Ermenberger, succeeded as abbess by her daughter, Mildred. Heard mass 3 times today. My father must want something of God. A rich son-in-law, no doubt, although there have been no further prune-faced suitors. No more news of George and Elis, the uncle thief. Mayhap their love is but a dream of Elis's. George for certain has said nothing, albeit he has new dark circles about his eyes and no winks for me. 20th day of November, Feast of St. Edmund the King. It is a strange and wonderful story about King Edmund. He was hacked to pieces by invading Vikings, and his head rolled under a thorn bush where it lay, calling, "Help, help," until his friends could find it and carry it home. I have added to the picture on my wall Edmund's head hiding in the bush, calling, "Help, help." His teeth are yellow because I have no white paint. But maybe they truly were yellow. Most people's are. 21st day of November. Feast of St. Gelasius, Pope, who insisted bishops give one quarter of their wealth to the poor. Morwena says today is the day Noah entered the ark. I asked her, how did she know? Was she there? She hates when I make jests about how old she is, so she just sniffed. 22nd day of November, Feast of St. Cecilia, who refused to sacrifice to pagan gods and was suffocated in her bathing room. We were visited by a procession of musicians today, celebrating the Feast of Cecilia, their special saint. We had music at dinner, with lutes and gitterns and pipes and drums. My favourite song was about Arthur and Guinevere. It was beautifully tragic. I have no talent to be a musician, but I now have it in my mind to be a song maker. One of the musicians showed me a jest to do with lute strings. He cut one and sprinkled the pieces on a bench near the fire. As they grew hot, they moved and twisted like worms or maggots. One of the dogs was fooled and started barking and scratching at the bench. Then she ate the strings. No one else noticed. A poor jest. 23rd day of November. Feast of St. Clement, thrown into the sea with an anchor around his neck. My mother, Morwena, and I are spending some days crushing, grinding, boiling, steeping, and straining herbs. The taste and smell of agrimony, betony, feverfew, and dill are in my clothes, my mouth, my hair, my ears. While we worked, my mother told the story of how she first met my father. She said, I was the ward of the Baron Fulk Longswood, my father having died some years before, and was living at the time with his family in their castle near York. One day appeared a young knight of no great fortune or renown, with great strong arms and shoulders, and eyes like a raven's. He claimed the Baron had cheated his father out of a plot of woodland, and he, the knight, wanted it back. When the Baron laughed and refused, the knight challenged him to a contest on the field of honour. The Baron bade his men throw the young knight out, and we all sat down to supper. I remember we ate minnows and eels baked with white apples. But all night we could hear the knight banging on the gatehouse door with the hilt of his sword, calling out his grievances. It began to rain, and then to snow. But day after day the knight stayed there, pounding on the door and shouting. I was most impressed with his strength and his stubbornness, and so too was the Baron, it seems, for he would not let his knights run the young man through with their swords, but instead brought him in and listened to him, gave him the woodland, and sat him at his side for dinner. Then the young knight's eyes found me, and I knew that strength and stubbornness would win me as they had the Baron, whether I would or no. And so I went right upstairs and packed my clothes. In 3 days we were wed and off to Stonebridge. We were both 15. That was the end of her story. I cannot imagine my father a young knight, but I certainly can see him pounding on the gatehouse door all night. I told my mother then some of my wanderings and about my wanting to be a songmaker. She pulled one of my plaits and said, "Songmaker, birdie, don't stretch your legs longer than your stockings or your toes will stick out." Then she added, "You are so much already, little bird. Why not cease your fearful pounding against the bars of your cage and be content?" I do not know exactly what that means, but it troubles me. 24th day of November, Feast of St. Minver, who threw her comb at the devil. Today I asked Morwenna about spells. "What," I asked, "is a spell against warts, against sickness in sheep?" "Oh, I asked, feigning innocence, "what would one use for a spell to come between lovers if one has no dragon dung?" "Facing the lovers by moonlight," she said. "Throw dirt from a new-made grave and say, 'Love abate, disintegrate, turn love to hate.' And what are you up to now, little bird?" That sounds too fearsome to me. I must find a spell that does not involve graves. 25th day of November, Feast of St. Catherine, a virgin of Alexandria, whose body was broken on a spiked wheel. Catherine, who is my own name saint, was, I know, a princess who refused to marry a pagan emperor. But I do not understand the part about her dying on a spiked wheel. What is a spiked wheel? Where are the spikes? What is it for, besides martyring virgins? How was she fastened on? Was it lying on the ground or upright? Why didn't they just put an arrow through her? Would I choose to die rather than be forced to marry? I hope to avoid the issue, for I do not think I have it in me to be a saint. Inspired by the musicians, I made a St. Catherine song. It begins, "Catherine, bless your namesake today. If I ever meet a pagan king, to you I'll pray. Hi diddly, hey diddly, sing ho. For save yourself, you didn't know how, but being a saint mayhap could do better now. Hi diddly, hey diddly, sing ho." This is as far as I've gotten. The hi diddlies are my favourite part. 26th day of November, Feast of St. Marcellus, a prince seized by heretics and hurled to his death from a high rock. I am confined to my chamber with my embroidery needle. My mother's doing. How it came about is this. Yesterday, being my saint's day and my birthday, there was a feast. We sat down to dinner at an hour before noon and stayed at table until after dark. The hall was crowded with guests, musicians, and servers, and was, for once, overwarm. We ate glazed eggs, apple tarts, whole pigeons and snipes, peacock in raisin sauce, red and white jellies, pig stomach stuffed with eggs and spices, and potted beef with nutmeg. I relished it all but the birds, which I never eat. During the feast, the cook and the kitchen boys paraded around the hall with a giant pastry they had made to honour me of St. Catherine dying on her wheel, with marzipan spikes and spun sugar soldiers. The wheel was upright. The eating went on forever. I was seated next my father, so I had no one to talk with. George was not there, so I had no one to look at. Finally, I conceived a small amusement to pass the time. I took a string from the lute that once was mine but now belongs to the cook, cut it into pieces as the travelling musician had showed me, and sprinkled them on a dish of creamed herring as it passed by. The heat of the dish made the pieces of string writhe and wiggle. The Lady Margaret, seated three places beyond me, dipped her hand ladylike into the dish and lifted a piece of fish to her mouth. Screeching like a barn owl, she jumped up and set about wiping her hand on her gown, the tablecloth, my father, whatever she could reach. The cook was summoned. I thought I was safe, and he would be blamed, but somehow it was sorted out, and my saint's day ended with the cook standing on the table, shaking his spoon at me and swearing in Saxon. I was sent from the table to prepare a potion of cinnamon and milk for the daughter of the Lord of Morton Manor, who fainted in the potted meat. What a ninny! Now I am imprisoned. Deus, it was meant as a jest. 27th day of November. Feast of St. Fergus, an Irish bishop, who condemned irregular marriages, sorcerers, and priests who wear their hair long. I am still confined to my chamber, with the army of girls here for my Saint's Day celebrations. Elis, the uncle thief, is with us, and I don't know how to act toward her. I have chosen for now slightly cold but well-behaved. Elis says her father will not speak to her of marriage to my uncle, and George has not said one word to her this entire visit. For one who claims to be perishing of love, she looks healthy enough. Perkins' granny says to put yarrow up their noses and spit, and Elis and George will love no more. Corpus bones! I could more easily get dirt from 100 graves than stuff yarrow up George's nose. 28th day of November. Feast of St. Juthwara, who wore cheeses on her chest and was beheaded by her stepbrother. As Elis and I passed George on the way in to supper, I threw a fistful of dirt at each of them, spattering us all. It was not really from a grave, but from the edge of the churchyard, yet it must suffice, for I am not venturing deep into any graveyard with this jealous evil in my heart. George and Elis looked dusty, puzzled, and sore vexed. I said the turn love to hate chant under my breath so no one could hear me, for sure else I would be punished, cast away, locked up, or laughed at, no one of which I relish. I do not know how long it will take the spell to work. By supper's end, they did not yet look like people whose love had turned to hate. 29th day of November. Feast of Saints Paramon and others. 375 martyrs killed in a single day. After supper yestereve, George accompanied the Baron's party back to Finbury Castle. George is now home again, ill-tempered and drunk. Corpus bones! All that men seem to know of doctoring is prescribing ale. When will the curse work? 30th day of November. Feast of St. Andrew, fisherman, apostle and martyr, missionary to Greece, Turkey and Poland. 3 weeks and 3 days before Christmas comes in. I had it in my mind to make a Christmas song, but I can think of nothing to say except when will the curse work. December. 2nd day of December. Feast of St. Bibiana, beaten with leaden whips until she died. So troubled was I by events of yesterday that I did not write, but sat long with my mother, who sang and stroked my hair as if I were a child. This is how it happened. The sun looked likely to shine yestermorn, so Gerd, the miller's son, and I left our chores undone and went to Wootton village, where they were to hang two thieves. never having seen a hanging, I could only imagine the huge hairy bandits with cruel scarred faces, snarling and growling fearsome curses, while we onlookers shrieked and shrank back in fear. I thought it sounded better even than a feast or a fair. Perkin could not be found, so I made the clay-brained Gerd go with me. It looked to be a gay occasion, even though the rain started before we were far along, which dampened our spirits a little and our shoes a lot. The sheriff had just constructed a new gallows, so the whole village turned out to celebrate. People were packed all around the church square, villagers and strangers, priests and children, peddlers and players, and hawkers selling every kind of food and drink. I bought sausages, bread, an onion, 2 meat pies, and an apple pastry, and ate most of it, for it was my penny, not Gerd's. We were all laughing and shouting when we saw the sheriff pull the cart in. I was calling, "Dead bandits never rob again," which I thought quite clever, as the cart passed me by, carrying the 2 bandits, ropes already tied about their necks. The sheriff dragged them from the cart and up the ladder to the gallows. Corpus bones. They were no more than 12 years old, skinny, frightened, and dirty. Their scared, stupid faces knocked the jolly right out of me, and when one leaned off the platform and grabbed my sleeve, slobbering and crying, "Help me, noble lady," I turned and ran. I was near out of the village before the first was shoved off the platform, but I could hear the cheering and laughing behind me. Gerd caught up with me, and we left Wootton, the clodpole rubbing his eyes with his grubby fists in sadness for missing the fun. I vomited up my bread and sausage, but Gerd kept his. All the way back to the Stonebridge Road, we could hear the laughing and cheering of the crowd. The wretched day grew worse still, for on our way home, we saw a funeral procession ride down the road toward London. It was midday, and the rain had slowed to a drizzle, but it was near as dark as dusk. Never have I seen so many men and horses so quiet, their bells and bridles muffled. The only sound was the thud of the horses' hooves on the wet ground. First came a crowd of men wrapped in black cloaks. I couldn't tell who they were, but the tall man in front had the saddest face I ever saw. Following them, 2 horses, one before and one after, carried a sort of litter with the coffin, and in the rear marched hundreds of soldiers in battle dress, without a smile or a wave for us, without a sound, except for the slow, measured tread of their boots. Gerd and I ran home, trembling with fear that the king had died, for who else would be taken to London with such a company, such pomp, and such grief? The king had been king as long as I had lived. How could we have another? What would happen to us? Gerd went to the mill, and I burst into the hall as if the devil were pulling my hair. My mother was there, getting spices for the cook from the locked cupboard, and I ran to her, crying for the king and myself. "No, little bird," she said. "You weep for the wrong person. It is not the king who is dead, but Eleanor, his kind and gentle queen." On her way to join the king as he warred against the Scots, the queen took ill and died. The king, broken of heart, came from Scotland to take her back to London. he built a towering stone cross to mark the place where she lay at Lincoln Castle, and will have one built at every stop from here to London. I knew then who the tall, sad-faced man was. I had seen the king, finally, for the first time, and there was no cheering or celebrating or glee, only grief. I had cried with the king. I told my mother then about the little bandits, and losing my sausage, and seeing the sad procession, and she cooed and comforted me, and forgot to scold me for running off. This made me feel some better, but what comforted me the most was